period. So, yeah.
The same thing with stories in the newspaper. You know, there's reaction and then there's action. Mm-hmm. And this was the story of the woman who swerved and hit a deer and rolled her car down an embankment and landed on the top, you know, the car landed on the roof, and she had 12 broken ribs. And she spent 4 days crawling to have someone notice her.
Wow, 4 days.
4 days.
Wow.
4 days. And that, to me, is equanimity. I mean, she knew what her goal was. She knew what her goal was. I mean, that may be when you're in that kind of, you know, how do I want to say, sort of a survival mode.
Right.
That, you know, what was in her consciousness was that there was action that she needed to take.
To take, rather than giving up.
Rather than just getting into the reaction, oh my God, here I am, nobody's here.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing about this practice is it facilitates letting go, mm-hmm. not giving up. Mm-hmm. So that subtle difference mm-hmm. there. You know, many times.
No, finish. I was just going to ask when you finish.
Oh, sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I must have repeated this a few times. You know, people think, those who have not practiced it, they think, and it's natural, they think, why are you making me a vegetable, you know? I want to be sensitive and passionate, and I want to feel stuff and react, and you know?
Mm-hmm. And not be indifferent. So that is a...
Yeah, indifference, yeah.
Difference between being indifferent and actively not active.
Right. Difference between becoming insensitive and supersensitive. And that can be experienced or understood only through practice. And that's where that difference lies between learning to let go, not give up. Mm-hmm. People think, oh, you're giving up on all the pleasures of life, and you're giving up on stuff, you know. We're not giving up on anything. We are letting go of what? Of our attachment to pleasure and pain. Letting go of what? Of craving and aversion.
Well, in the mindfulness, most of us don't spend any time in the present.
Sorry?
Most of us don't spend any time in the present.
Right.
Moment.
Right.
You know, it's either behind us or ahead of us.
Ahead of us, right.
Uh-huh. But in being mindful, it's to be here now.
Absolutely. Present moment awareness.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful definition of mindfulness, present moment awareness.
And all of our judgment is based on past and future.
Absolutely.
Which then being present in the moment takes us out of judgment.
Right.
Which is where suffering comes from.
Beautiful.
So my question is a little bit related, but when you were talking about the person in traffic,
mm-hmm.
so I'm wondering whether, if you can like talk about the differentiation, let's mm-hmm. say you're in traffic, somebody cuts in front of you,
yes.
you have equanimity, you say, oh, this person just drove in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's just an objective observation.
Right.
That this person just drove in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you took it another step and you said, maybe he had a bad day. Maybe
right.
he's not feeling well. So I'm just wondering about this additional empathy or your thought that
mm-hmm.
moves into empathy versus just staying in this person just drove in front of me.
Yeah. That's why I said equanimity has active parameter.
Okay.
The element of equanimity is not passive. It's active. It's that sublime state of mind, it automatically facilitates empathetic behavior.
Okay. So it's like a step, another step forward, if you move from just this person just drove in front of me.
Right.
to moving into an empathetic
place. Right.
And kind of thinking, you know, a positive thing towards that person.
Absolutely, right. Equanimity is very subtle, very complicated, can be very misleading, you know. But as long as you realize that it is active in nature, not passive, you know. Like I said, we're not becoming vegetables. So, in fact, as we all know, empathy is the number one reason why we have evolved to a level where we are. You know, it's a very important element of evolution. And what we are doing is we are just increasing that speed, like from 50 miles per hour to 500 miles per hour by doing the meditation practice.
So then when you experience the moving to empathy,
mm-hmm.
then that's when you become more aware that this isn't about just being indifferent. I mean, you know, because like you said, a lot of people say, well, I don't want to be a vegetable.
Right.
So you can tell that you're not a vegetable
mm-hmm.
when you move into feeling empathy.
Right.
So that's when you're super sensitive.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Right. They're all intertwined. It's not that something happens first and then the next thing happens. Everything is happening simultaneously. There's concentration, mindfulness, there's non-reaction, bang, equanimity, empathy, you know. So it's all happening so spontaneously. And that's a very, very important point because there are many meditators who very diligently practice equanimity, but in a very wrong way. So what, and that's called false equanimity. And for example, if somebody, let's say, attacks you and you just don't do anything, that's false equanimity. But when somebody is attacking you, if you arouse compassion for the attacker, then it is real equanimity. So always there is this empathy, there is that compassion, there is that higher state of mind, you know, where it's super sensitive in the sense that it acts at a very different level. It's not acting at the level of thinking or even thoughtfulness. It has gone way beyond that.
Now, even the feeling of empathy or compassion, there isn't a feeler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not feeling empathy. That's me.
Right. So in the breathing workout, we learn to experientially understand, quote unquote, experientially. There is no breather behind the breath. That's the fourth element of meditation, which is called wise attention. After a certain level of practice, you will start giving attention wisely to what is happening at the level of body-mind consciousness, constantly. What is happening? And suddenly, the moment of awakening, the Eureka moment, oh, there is no breather here. It's just this body that is breathing. And then you move on. Oh, there are just these feelings. They are coming and going. There is no feeler behind the feelings. You move on. Oh, there are just these thoughts. They are coming and going like clouds come in the sky. There is no thinker behind the thoughts. You keep moving. And then one day, if you're lucky, you realize, oh, there are just these experiences. There is no experiencer behind the experiences. That's how you transcend the body, you transcend the mind and consciousness. And when you do that, that experience is the experience of the soul. So we've been doing the soul journey series for the last three, four weeks. And so this is the roadmap to reach the realm of the soul.
So the soul is the experiencer.
That's another level of, it's called latent tendency of delusion. In the traditional terms, we call it anusuya. I don't know if you've heard the word. That is the hardest one to penetrate. and transcend. The hardest one. When we think that the soul is the experiencer, that's when the delusion of individual soul arises. Okay? But if you can transcend that, then you are in the realm of soul. So, you transcend Atma and reach Paramatma. That's how you can understand it for in the traditional language, you know. That journey from Atma to Paramatma is the most profound journey. So intellectually we can understand, I can tell you in very, very nice language and, you know, very smartly, whatever, cleverly, you know, that the soul is not the experiencer. But it doesn't have any meaning. That kind of wisdom can come only through experience. Because it transcends language, it transcends experience itself. So, but intellectual understanding is important. It sets the foundation for the journey. It purifies the intellect. And intellect is our number one tool, not beliefs. We're not going to get anywhere with beliefs. Our guiding tool is the intellect. And we combine the intellect with the practice and, you know, move on. So you were actually not there last 2-3 weeks, but I want to just kind of quickly run you through, and this will also be like capping off whatever we've talked about. So basically, we've been talking about soul, and like we said, if you were to look into the mirror and ask yourself a question, who am I, right? And then start contemplating on it, you will first realize that I am this body, right? There is this body. If you contemplate further, you will realize that there is something beyond the body, that which thinks, perceives, feels, right? You call it the mind. Okay, I'm the body, I'm the mind. And then one day you will realize that there is the experience of the body and mind. That experiential aspect is consciousness. The phenomenon of experience is consciousness. The phenomenon of cognition, the phenomenon of knowingness is consciousness. Then you realize, oh, okay, I'm this body, mind, consciousness. There is still that I there, because we are attached to the body, mind, and consciousness. We think it's my body, my mind, my consciousness. But with this practice which we are doing here, time comes when you realize that body is body, mind is mind, consciousness is consciousness. Not my body, my mind, my consciousness. Why we feel pain? Because we think it's in my body. Why we feel anger, repentance, guilt? Because we think it's my thoughts, it's what something that I have done. So on and so forth. That understanding, that awareness, that body is body, mind is mind, consciousness is unconsciousness, not me. That awareness, that understanding, that knowingness, that beingness is what soul is. So in general, whatever we are experiencing actually is happening because of body, mind, consciousness. The interaction between the three, so that green triangle is really what every single experience can be identified as. But it's just an experience, it's just a phenomenon of body, mind, consciousness. So when we constantly say that, when we constantly are aware of that, then we are abiding in the realm of the soul. We are becoming soulful. You see what I'm saying? It's just that awareness, that understanding to the extent necessary, that this phenomenon is this, this is this, it is as it is. Just that awareness is what soulfulness is all about, is what mental perfection is all about. So in order to understand body, mind, consciousness, we use the analogy of the electric bulb, if you all remember. So if you were to look at the bulb, it has this structure, right? And the The blue thing is the inert gas inside the bulb, and the lit filament is the tungsten filament, as we all know. So we said bulb is the body, the on-off switch is the mind, and the electric current that lights the bulb is consciousness. Everybody remember that, mm-hmm. right? And I'm sorry, I'm like repeating it every Sunday, but is that clear to you, Elizabeth? It's just an analogy. The light will not turn on unless there is bulb, wire, switch, and electricity. Right? Similarly, nothing, absolutely nothing will happen in the realm of experience. Absolutely nothing can happen in the realm of existence unless matter, mind, and consciousness come together. It's the matter of delusion if you think that consciousness can exist by itself. It's a matter of delusion if we think that mind can exist by itself. It cannot. Matter, mind, and consciousness, this is a profound law of nature. They all have to arise interdependently for existence to arise, for experience to arise. So now going further, today I want to talk a little bit about matter, about human body, how it partakes in the phenomenon of experience. So in this analogy, you have the filament and the glass enclosure, another thing, right? And then you also have the inert gas, right? So now applying that to human body, let's say you are hearing me right now, right? What apparatus are you using to hear me?
Physically, ears.
Ears.
Which have canals in it.
Right.
Connects the brain.
Correct. So there is ear, but inside the cavity of the ear, there is another matter called the subtle ear matter. There are two types of matter in human body. One is organic matter and the other one is non-organic matter. Organic matter we can see under the microscope, but non-organic matter you can't. You can't see. Just like in this electric bulb, the filament and the glass enclosure, you can see, but can you see the inert gas? You can't, right? But without the inert gas, you cannot turn on the light.
And likewise with the ear, unless you bring into awareness the vibration of sound, mm-hmm. which is not something you can measure, but it's not something you can see.
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
Get to that.
Sorry.
No problem. I just wanted to introduce the idea that there is organic and non-organic matter in the body. So you have the ear, and inside the ear there is subtle ear matter. In the traditional term we call it indriya. So the subtle ear matter and the ear. Okay, that's the body part. Okay, what's the mind part? Your desire to hear. You're not walking out of here. You're sitting here. There's that volition, right? That desire, that volition is the mind. And what's the other part?
Consciousness.
There is that ear consciousness that is arising dependent upon the ear, the subtle ear matter, and the desire to hear. Unless those three things are combined, you won't be able to hear. Unless you have the body, which is ear and the subtle ear matter, unless you have the desire to hear, and unless there is ear consciousness which arises, it's a distinct consciousness. And we have talked about this, there are 121 types of consciousness that partake in the phenomenon of experience, any experience, like the experience of hearing, right? Similarly, other experiences of seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, all these experiences, there is a body part, there is a mind part, and there is a consciousness part. Like smelling, there is a nose consciousness. Touching, there is a touch consciousness. everything combines and gives rise to a phenomenon. Now, your question, your general question, what's the point, right? All this discussion is not just dry discussion. There's a reason, there's a point behind understanding what is happening behind our experience. If you were to know that you are hearing because there is ear, there is mind there, and there is that ear consciousness, then automatically the delusion will not arise that I am hearing. You know, the ego will not arise. You got the point? Generally, the sense of self, specifically the separate self, arises because we don't know the we have the unknowns. We don't know what is going on, right? The ego arises because we don't know who is hearing. The ego arises because we don't know who's thinking, who's feeling, smelling, touching, whatever, so on and so forth. And as we all know, ego is the ultimate cause of all suffering, right? We are suffering because we feel we are separate, self. We are somebody separate from the rest. The consciousness that is hearing there is the same consciousness that is hearing here, 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 here. The mind that is hearing is the same for here, 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 here. The matter, what's the difference between your eye and my eye? None. Period. It's exactly made of the same stuff. Anybody will agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The subtle eye matter. Everything is exactly the same. But still we feel that I'm different from you, you are different from me. It's that sense of separation, which is the cause of all conflict, all suffering, you know.
So the question looking in the mirror shouldn't be who am I?
Mm-hmm.
It should be who is this or what is
this? The right question to ask is what am I, not who am I. Because when you ask the question who am I, there is already
an
presupposition that I exist. Very good. So sometimes it sounds very, you know, like an intellectual exercise, but there is a point to it, and I hope I made that point clear. There is also an element of scare, fear, you know, when you realize that, oh, there is no I. We are afraid, right? We have been brought up in the tradition, we have been brought up in the lifestyle, right from our birth, we hold our dad and mom, dad's hand and mom's foot, and we grow up, you know. We need support, right? And that I provides that support. And when the wisdom arises, when the truth arises, then we get afraid, we get scared. We are taking away the support, right? So when that element comes, we have to become aware of it.
So when you say what am I, are you talking about the answer to that being soul?
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. Instead of who am I,
and when you move into soul, then your soul, you're saying it is in error to think of individual soul.
Correct, absolutely. Like I said, it's the subtlest degree of delusion, subtlest degree of ignorance. We have to transcend that also to reach Paramatma, the soul.
Sorry, our intellect is really drawn to this, but our who is sitting here going, I'm
going to
battle you.
Oh, it resists. It resists like anything. It absolutely wants to survive. Ego wants to survive. It wants to fight.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to fight all the time. And that's why intellect is very important. If we don't use intellect as our guiding tool, then we can easily get carried away by a belief system. by dogma, doctrine, very easily.
Because we want. Yeah, it's very interesting in the Gita where the king is blind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some respects, we're all blind.
Right, absolutely. That's what ego does. It
mm-hmm.
pulls the curtain over your intellect.
Mm-hmm.
It pulls, it covers the truth. And our whole practice is about uncovering the truth, you know. Enlightenment is about becoming aware of awareness, you know. So, Pat?
Yeah. What? I'm here.
Good. Excellent. How about you, ma'am? Any comments or
no.
questions?
I'm still confused with what am I? It should be like you said, what is this? Right? The
mm-hmm.
question is not what am I.
Okay. Good. He's further purifying the question. He's further making it straightforward. Yes. Good. So, let's say we walk on this journey, okay? And here comes enlightenment, right? Then what?
Maybe it's not a one question, it's many questions like who am I, what am
oh.
I, where I came from, what's going on. There's so many questions.
But that's a fundamental question. The fundamental question, the last question to be answered. So the journey continues and comes the enlightenment. Then what? Go back to the mirror and look again. And see what you see in the mirror, right? So if you see yourself in the mirror, then you know that you are not enlightened, right? You got the point, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't see yourself, but you are scared, then also you are not enlightened. But if you don't see yourself and you are smiling, then actually the fact of the matter is there is no such thing as enlightened being. There are only enlightening moments. An ancient master said that.
Even that is not permanent.
Right. Impersonality is the trademark of enlightenment, right? So how can you say that I am enlightened? Right? So.
I guess the metaphor for me is the sort of universe where you see a plant here and a star here. And all those are those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look into the dark to know, and not this, not that.
Right.
And when we can remain in that, that's when we're truly.
Then we can.
That is the that is the phenomenon of
enlightenment. So the point is, enlightenment is also a phenomenon, just like body is mind is consciousness. Because
mm-hmm.
there is also danger there to get attached to enlightenment. There also, enlightenment is a phenomenon, but it's not a conditional phenomenon like body, mind and consciousness. It's an unconditional phenomenon. And our job is to continuously tap into that phenomenon, constantly. That's all spiritual practice is all about.
Because there are days when we are compassionate, you know, when somebody crosses the lane, comes in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
There are days when we are compassionate, and there are days we are like, get out of my way, you know. So we have to constantly make ourselves compassionate.
Absolutely.
I'm at that stage. I'm not talking about the...
Sure. But please don't settle for anything less
mm-hmm.
than enlightenment. All other things are going to happen on the way. It's law of nature. Loving kindness is going to arise. Compassion is going to arise. Gladness, bliss, equanimity. But that's not the final destination. Great. Thanks.